Yeah. We made it. Top of the world.
Used to be. Yeah. People be asking what's happening with these rapping dudes. Just enjoying the view from this altitude. They can't help but show hatred when you be making moves. We out for that callaloo like Jamaican food. We set a place for you, break bread with a boss is done. Courtside till Drew High said it's your time. The discography read like an anthology.
The education of Smith and Wesson.
It's not a comedy.
No.
Ain't no apologies, fabrication of fallacies.
Nope.
Follow the protocol, dedication to policy.
Yep. Now some lords owning properties.
Even a homeless man owes currency over poverty. But they jealous of the camaraderie.
We had to downsize.
Quality over quantity. Enter the stage, billboard pages acknowledge we.
Look up.
See us in the stars like astrology.
Raise the voices up a couple decibels. Think and sing, let it ring through the festivals. Don't they sound so heavenly? I say it like a G, I miss my brother P. Influential, temperamental. I'm setting the tempo straight from the intro. Now everybody sure he is authentic. And don't nobody care about the music business. Except the culture vultures and the soul snatchers. Hard doing business with your cracker ass crackers. Stop geeking, y'all niggas dope fiends. Fucking with that molly and promethazine. That shit'll end your life quicker than any type of liquor. Taking out your liver. The guard is swifter than a scammer with a scanner. Blam you with the hammer. Ladies, pardon my manners. But when it's all type of bitches saying you the man, it get hard to keep your dick in your pants. I ain't hateful.
No.
I'm grateful. Yeah, I fucked up. I made mistakes too. That's why when you find a true one, it's only right that you make her an honest woman and make a wife. And by no means, I ain't better than anybody. I just know how shit go down in clubs and after parties. When the loud is lit and the bottles popping, and it be mostly niggas doing the dick riding. It's time we call a spade, real recognize real, y'all looking hella lame, hard hitting, dawn living, God given, no harm, affliction upon women and children, it was written, what I'm spitting, only kings be sitting, play your position, hire help, stay in the kitchen, crown on the wrist, pound or a fifth, I'm just shooting you, would you consider it a gift,
so everything that comes to birth, something to the giver. You owe to your father honor. You owe to your mother honor. But to God, you owe your all. Not to a government. Not to a flag, not to a king, not to a ruler. You owe it all.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat. Between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Show. I am your host, Jenna Kepra, alongside my co-host, Brother Roz. Today is April the 30th, 2019. Hope this is reaching you in a comfortable state. Roz, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, man, it's been a long and rough one, but and quite busy. We kind of chopped it up a little bit about that before we got on the air. But I'm glad I'm good. health wise, I'm good. The family's good. I hope the same is the truth for you and the other callers and listeners as well.
Yes, and thank you for that.
As black folks, we got to get used to the fact that a lot of our days are not going to be perfect and they're not going to be fun. It's just stressful being in the position that we're in, and we're in the same position globally. So these things are going to happen all the time, and just because of the stuff that I've been through with my family, some of the stuff I know is not accidental at all as far as the way that these things happen. But like I said, it comes with the territory. Let's stay focused and get it cracking, for sure.
Man, distractions from every which way.
All the time.
Something my grandmama used to say. Anyhow, we are continuing, hoping that we can get the rest of this out about gentrification and the projects. It went from the project being the buildings to the project being us. And last week I asked the question, when will we look back and start making those little slight changes? And it always starts at home, but every so many decades, we have some type of trend that comes through, whether it's a new identification, tribal affiliations, like you say, Roz,
or just some type of
calamity, whether it's what they're publicizing as a riot, which we know is white terror, drugs. You know, it's always some type of state of emergency within our quote unquote community that we always have to tend to. Mm-hmm. And we never really have time to think about how can we take advantage of what's taking advantage of us. What I mean by that is, if we're being taken advantage of and somebody's fleeing a particular area, how can we take advantage of that? So before I go any further, Roz, you wanted to get into, I know everyone's waiting to hear what you got for the health segment. So you want to get into that first?
Sure, I can do that. I don't think it's going to be that long. Let me just go through the thread real quick. And I know there's only a couple. Oh, one is, towards the end of the thread, this is what happens to your body when you take CBD. I wanted you to play that. It's like only like 4 minutes, I think, if that.
Good Life?
Yes, Good Life.
CBD oil is the new popular natural remedy for various common illnesses. CBD, or cannabidiol, is one of 104 chemical compounds found in cannabis, which can deliver all its medicinal properties without making you high. CBD oil is made by extracting CBD from the cannabis plant, then diluting it with a carrier oil, like coconut or hemp seed oil. A whole community has been developed that advocates the health benefits and use of CBD oil. Various scientific studies have also proved its therapeutic properties in various ailments. But a question arises. What changes happens in your body if you start taking it today? Number one, it starts relieving chronic pain. Any kind of chronic pain in the body, like multiple sclerosis, arthritis, fibromyalgia, starts to subside. People suffering from terminal illnesses are finding relief with CBD. CBD binds with pain-producing brain cells and alter their function to relieve chronic excruciating pain from the body. Number two, it starts reducing anxiety and depression. CBD has been shown to reduce levels of stress and anxiety in those suffering from conditions such as PTSD, social anxiety disorder, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. According to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, depression affects 6% and anxiety affects 18% of the U.S. population each year. Research shows that CBD oil can help with both. Number three, it starts reducing inflammation. Chronic inflammation contributes to many non-infectious diseases, including heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, autoimmune disease, and more. Research also shows that CBD oil can reduce chronic inflammation that leads to disease. 5. It starts reducing oxidative stress damage. Oxidative stress is when the body has too many free radicals and can't keep up with neutralizing them. This is responsible for many common illnesses today. This problem has been aggravated today because of increased pollution and toxicity in the environment. CBD can help reduce neurological damage caused by free radicals. 6. It starts promoting weight loss. Cannabidiol can help maintain healthy blood sugar, stimulates genes and proteins that helps break down fat, and increase mitochondria that helps burn calories. It overall promotes healthy weight management. 7. It starts improving heart health. Cannabidiol reduces artery blockage, reduces stress-induced cardiovascular response. It also lowers your blood pressure. It may also reduce cholesterol. 8. It starts to reduce acne. CBD oil can be used topically to treat skin conditions. Studies show CBD oil can help treat acne due to its anti-inflammatory properties and ability to reduce sebum production. CBD also contains many nutrients like vitamin E that help improve and protect the skin. 9. It starts fighting with cancer cells. CBD oil's role in cancer treatment still needs more research, but what is available is looking promising. According to the American Cancer Society, CBD oil can slow the growth and spread of some kinds of cancer because it fights oxidative stress and inflammation. CBD oil is taken in form of drops or applied as a cream. It can also be sprayed under the tongue. If you are interested, talk to your doctor before starting to use CBD oil. If you like the video, give it a thumbs up and share it with your friends. To watch more videos like this, press that subscribe button and the bell icon to be one of the first people to know when we put out a new video.
That was an awesome little video, Russ.
Oh, thank you, man. It was a little gem I was able to find. Give me 1 second.
Okay, well, yeah.
I was drinking something and it went down the wrong hole, so I'm coughing. But, yeah, it was a nice little gem. I just wanted to kind of introduce folks to a little bit more information about CBD. One thing that you can look up to find out more about it, how it works and its origins, because we actually, our brains actually produce cannabis and CBD, but most people are kept what they call cannabinoid deficient, and it actually is connected to a myriad of different illnesses, to autism, to Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ADHD. There's a whole host of them, but this one was really good because it's a great introduction to its basic benefits, and I would say a lot of people don't know that just about every living thing that has a central nervous system in the brain produces its own cannabis, including people. And the reason it is produced by the brain is because it's one of the main mitigators of pain, especially before we had a medical system that we created in nature. That's what it does. And I've always used the example of a lion is hunting on the African savannah, and they attack a buffalo, and the buffalo gores the leader of the group in the side, and she has a gaping hole in her side from where the buffalo gored her. And of course they don't have lion doctors that sewed them up, so they have to pretty much keep the wound clean, try to eat, and lions do actually provide food for injured members, and then try and rest as much as possible to allow the wound to heal and just keep it clean so it doesn't get infected. But all during that time, lions don't have anything in nature that they eat to reduce pain. So it's the cannabinoids that their brains produce that dull the pain and make it more bearable while their body goes through the healing process. It also is great for dealing with psychological pain like PTSD, traumatic brain injury, TBI. It's also anti-inflammatory. It's also great for people who may deal with seizures of any type. So CBD is just really, really potent. And like they said, it's you get all the benefits that you can get from cannabis, but it doesn't get you high. So if you're a person who wants the benefits without the high, then CBD is the way to go. if you want the benefits and you want to be able to pass a drug test, then CBD is the way to go. And you can get CBD in many forms. It comes in gummies, and usually they'll have it exactly dosed. So you can get, like, let's say 10 milligram candies that you can take, let's say, four of if you wanted to get a 40 milligram dose. They have them at 25 milligrams, 60 milligrams, 50, 25. You also can get the actual flower. And with the flower, you can vaporize it or smoke it. You can get it in the oil form that you can also vaporize as well. And it'll you can utilize it that way. It's an efficient way of getting it into your system. But with regular use, you'll find that there's more and more things that it helps you with over time. Some of them you might not even notice. And then once you do notice it, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that pain I used to have all the time. It's like sometimes we live with pain for so long, we get used to it. So we almost forget it's there, and it just becomes a part of our daily lives. And then you'll encounter something like CBD, that pain will disappear. And then one day you wake up and say, oh, wow, that pain is gone. And it's like you don't even notice it because you've been used to it for so long. So once it's gone, it's almost like your friend. You're looking around for him, and he's not there no more. It's like, oh, yeah, that pain is gone. Okay. And you keep it moving. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to say, but I thought that was good. What were you going to say, Jennifer?
Nah, just to add on to that, you know, either that what you said, or you forget to get some more, and then you remember why you was introduced to it the first place.
Very, very true. Yeah, that's true too, that, because that has happened, and it does happen for sure. So with that, the other article is really just something that I want people to think about, because I've seen a documentary on this and it was quite disturbing. But with China taking over the world, I think that people, especially our people, because our organs are the most valuable, should be very aware of what's happening in China, because as they take over things, and that includes the United States, because the United States is pretty much in receivership to China. China has the largest debt of the United States in its grasp, and that's one of the things it's going to use as leverage against them as time progresses in this war that's brewing between China, Russia, and the U.S. But this is it here. It's from Face to Face Africa. It says, jailed Nigerians decry killings and organ harvesting in Chinese prisons. So I don't think it's that long, but it's just something that I think we need to really think about, especially those of us that live maybe in African countries or in Caribbean countries where Chinese people are literally taking over, which they are. So it says, civil society groups in Nigeria are calling on President Muhammadu Buhari to investigate claims by Nigerians jailed in China of mysterious deaths and organ trafficking in Chinese prisons. During a civil society forum held in Lagos, Nigeria, Osimene Osita, the executive director of civil rights group Patriotic Citizen Initiatives, or PCI, revealed that they have been receiving numerous complaints from Nigerians serving jail terms in China, according to Punch. Those who contacted PCI alleged that Nigerian inmates have been disappearing from Chinese prisons under mysterious circumstances, with some claiming that the victims are taken out of their cells and executed by prison officials for purposes of harvesting and selling their organs. Quote, there is right to demand from the Nigerian's Ministry of Foreign Affairs of their duties, including our foreign mission in China, in light of the lingering tortures, human rights violations, and gross inhumanity that Nigerians are frequently subjected to, unquote, Osita demanded.
Important so security.
Thousands of Nigerians jailed in China. Nigerian civil society organization, Black African Reorientation and Development Organization, or BARADO, has also appealed to the government of Nigeria to expedite the release of more than 6,000 Nigerians suffering in Chinese prisons. The organization held peaceful protests in Abuja, Nigeria, on Wednesday, where its executive director, Nkem Anyata Lafia, called on the government to consider negotiating with China for the release of its citizens. Quote, bring home our Nigerian brothers and sisters serving various jail terms in China to complete their jail terms in Nigeria, unquote. Anyata Lafia was quoted by the Herald as saying. Anyata Lafia also revealed that more than 6,000 Nigerians currently jailed in China, more than 55% of them have been imprisoned, quote, unlawfully and illegally, unquote. In fact, more than 90% of these Nigerians have been in jail for more than 10 years and are on a daily basis subject to unnatural hard labor and torture, according to Mr. Anyata Lafia. What's more, some of these prisoners are reportedly not even aware of the crimes they committed or when they will be released. And quote, in some cases, death sentences are passed carelessly and secret executions carried out in questionable conditions. There are even alleged cases of organ harvesting to treat their rich industrialists with failing health, unquote, Anyata Lafia added. Neither the government of Nigeria or its Chinese counterpart has responded to these allegations. So this is telling you now, I saw a documentary, a couple of them, in the last couple of months, dealing with China and organ harvesting. And it is horrifying. And that there's no word adequate in the English language for what I saw in those friggin' documentaries. It's the worst horror movie. It's the worst human beings being treated like animal parts. I mean, I've just never seen ruthless efficiency at killing people and selling their organs as they do in China. And this is pretty much how it works. And it's funny, years ago, I met a woman on the train coming home from work. She was a Buddhist, and she was a part of a community called the Falun Gong community. That's F as in Frank, A-L-U-N, Gong, G-O-N-G. And they are a marginalized Buddhist sect in China. And they pretty much stick to really, really peaceful tenets. She was one of the most humble, peaceful, didn't speak very good English people I've ever come across on the train. And she was telling me about her tradition, and she said that they had almost like a moving chi, Tai Chi, like it's like a meditation in motion. They had these different, they would meet up every weekend and do their practices together, things like that. And she had told me that in China that they're killed and they're marginalized. So I read her pamphlet she gave me, and in there it just talks about them being pretty much the government in China is trying to eradicate them. One of the main ways they do it is they jail them. And then what they do is not just for rich and ailing Chinese people, they also do it for rich white people and anybody with money. So it could be rich Indians, rich Saudi Arabians, rich white people, but Chinese people get the most benefit out of this. What they do is they do testing on their prisoners, whether they're black, whether they're Chinese, doesn't matter, to see if they're a genetic match for one of the rich people that need organs like kidneys or hearts or whatever it is. And then they kill them to order. Harvest their organs and then sell them to the person who they genetically match them to. And if they have more than one genetic match and the first genetic match fails for any reason, they just off the next one in line that's a genetic match and then try and use those organs because they don't get paid until they're successful at the surgery. So this is happening right now as we speak. And as China takes over the world and China starts to institute its form of Chinese supremacy in place of white supremacy, understand that that's coming with it. And they're going to end up owning, and they own quite a bit of the United States as we speak, and are buying up more and more of it as we speak as well. So as they take over these places, you're going to see more and more black people disappearing. The other part is you heard that these Nigerians are being jailed in China, and the Nigerian government is being asked to plead on their behalf to get them removed from Chinese prisons and have them serve their jail terms in Nigeria. A lot of them have been falsely imprisoned. They don't know why they're there. Some of them, a lot of them have been there over 10 years, they said. Now, China, in its relation with African countries, builds precincts in these countries. They started with South Africa, and I think they were trying to do it in Zimbabwe, which I know that they just got their government really hefty for not paying back their loans. So this is a part of their soft takeover. And anytime their Chinese citizens do anything wrong in Africa, they get dealt with by the Chinese precinct that's on the African soil. Why don't African countries ask for the same request of China? Why doesn't China install a Chinese chief of African descent? Like the government of Nigeria just stupidly did recently. They installed a Chinese man as a chief because there's so many Chinese living in this particular area of Nigeria that pretty much they installed him as a chief over the area that these Chinese people live. But you don't hear China doing that. They're not giving up their sovereignty to any outsiders. Why do we keep doing this stuff? And then we end up complaining when we get the results that come with having these invaders come into our countries and do what they want. And now you're hearing from Nigerians who have been jailed there, they're disappearing mysteriously and their organs are being harvested. And that's exactly what they've been doing to the Falun Gong community. They're probably the most oppressed group in China, or at close for the top 2 to 3 spots is Falun Gong community. So I just wanted to put that out there because a lot of people think this China stuff is strictly about economics, and it is to a degree. But remember that the biggest black gold commodity on the planet is the black body. Organs, melanin, they're even using aborted babies in food products. They're using aborted babies in women's face care and skin care products. This is a fact. Planned Parenthood was just busted selling body parts to the cosmetic industry. So black people who get abortions, know that your child is being chopped up and placed in product that people are using. That's just a fact. So the biggest commodity, they used to call our ancestors black gold because we were literally worth our weight in gold. We still worth our weight in gold, but it's more so dead than alive. And that's the organ harvesting and organ trafficking industry. And you're hearing it there, and China's literally taking over like the new cancer. Everywhere you go is Chinese people, and they're dominating everything. And I know for a fact, in a lot of the Chinatowns, they have it set up just like the Jews. They have their own judicial system. They have something called tongs. Tongs are pretty much Chinese gangs that run all the criminal activities in the area. They have codified rules to how they operate so that innocent Chinese citizens are not caught in the crossfire. It's very rare that you hear about these tongs having public violence. They used to hear it in the 70s and whatnot when they were more overt with their stuff, but now it's really, really on the low, on the real, real low key, so you don't really hear about that. And they mitigate all of their issues so they do not have to use the white U.S. court for anything unless they're caught doing a crime outside of Chinatown and they can't mitigate that crime, so they get caught by white people. That's the only time you hear about Chinese people getting into trouble. But if they do their stuff in their little area, their little Chinatown area, they got it sewn up. Just like the Jews do. And I can tell you that because I grew up in Brooklyn, right where the Jews and the West Indians or Caribbean people live, black Caribbean people live alongside each other. And they have their own police force. They have their own schools. They have their own businesses. Jews do not have to leave their neighborhood for anything. So they got it sewn up. And the police let their little police force police their Jewish neighborhood. And they've been known to kill black people on occasion. They've been known to brutalize black people on occasion, and nothing happens to them. That was a part of what caused the riot under Dave Dinkins, was that these people were getting away with just killing black folks and nothing was being done about it because they have power with the white folks in government. So, yeah, I just want to put that out there. Hopefully it just gives people something to think about, simply because there's just a lot happening. We need to stay aware. So with that, we're just going to go and take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And you are now live on Real Life, the radio show with myself, Ross, and my co-host, Jenna Kepra. If you wish to call in, you can dial in at 719-284-5471. That's 719-284-5271. Excuse me. So it's 719-284-5271. Again, that's 719-284-5271. And the access code is 70637. That's if you wish to call in and ask a question or make a comment.
It was another video. Did we have? Okay. How do you open the mics, Roz?
Is somebody trying to speak right now?
No.
Everybody's muted on the board.
Right.
But you should have a little icon you can press there.
Okay.
To unmute them. Yeah. Were you having trouble seeing it?
No, I just froze up for a second.
Oh, okay. No problem. So you're saying that there was another video?
Wasn't there?
There's a couple of them that I wanted to get into. So I would say...
I think this one would, about the voluntary colonism would be,
Yes,
great place
that would
to
be
start.
Yeah, no problem. Go ahead and do that. I was thinking that too.
Wake up, Africa. Your time has come. Open up your eyes and see the sun. Open up your spirit.
Wake up,
Helen Mo
welcome to Africa Watch on the Dr. Mumbi Show. My name is Dr. Mumbi Saraki. I'm not in Nairobi, Kenya. I'm all the way in New York City, just, you know, doing my thing. And some strange things have been happening across the African continent. You know, the news never stops. And there was a shocking, shocking revelation that came out. So apparently, there's a German minister who recently came out and said that in order to stop or to curb the migration of so many young people to Europe, they want to start building colonial cities in Africa. And basically, these cities would be run by the former colonialists, like by Germany, by the EU, by Britain. And they would be, you know, a law unto themselves, and that they would like now sponsor like the young, you know, the young people. Instead of having them go to Europe, they'd now be able to come to the city, find work, find a living. This is crazy. This is crazy. I mean, these guys never stop. And so this proposal by the senior German official for foreign powers to acquire land in Africa and be cities onto their own. And what they're calling it is voluntary colonialism. I'm telling you, their agenda and their strategy, I was just like, really? Now, before everyone, you know, before you lose it, the African Union has rejected it as a lazy solution to the emigration of African youth to Europe. But it just confirms to us that these people continuously look for ways to keep us enslaved, to recolonize us. I mean, they've got the neo-colonial agenda that is covert or overt or whatever you want to call it. And then now they're blatantly coming out and telling us what their agenda is. I'm just glad the African Union turned it down, but this is worrying. This is very disturbing. That an idea like this would even be seeded in someone's mind is totally crazy. And you know what's more crazy? Is they were actually African analysts who agreed and said, you know what, actually, that's such a good idea. They should come and help us with our youth and help us with the... I was just like, you know, we are part of our problem. I'm telling you, sometimes you want to blame the colonizer, but seriously, we are also part of our problem. And, you know... I can't believe, I just want to share with you what this proposal said. So apparently, they were just saying, like, if not a country like Germany or the UK, they would propose that the EU or the World Bank, which we know are total globalist New World Order agenda people, should build and run cities in Africa to boost job creation and development on the continent. And you know what disturbs me? Is that they try and make it seem that the issue with lack of development in Africa, it's just happening, you know, because we can't get it together. They don't talk about how it's their hidden hand that has kept Africa where it is. Not only have they supported dictators for so long, not only do they continue to manipulate the politics and the economies of our nations, but they created this problem. And now they want to come and take... I can't imagine. I'm just like, I and to make it even worse, right? This idea was actually developed by a Nobel Prize winning economist, and his name is Paul Romer. So he developed this idea way back, like in, I think it was in the late 2008 or 2007. And I hope he didn't win the Nobel Prize for that. I mean, come on. And so basically what he had said is that African countries should lease land to a foreign body to allow free development for about 50 years. Anyway. We'll be right back.
Oh, come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel.
Welcome back to Africa Watch on the Dr. Mumbi Show. My name is Dr. Mumbi Saraki. Shooting from New York, guys, building bridges. We here in the heart of the belly or the belly of the beast or whatever you want to call it. But you know what? America has been good to us. Not so much America, but our brothers and sisters. And I'll be sharing so many more videos of interviews I've done, you know, with different African Americans, brothers and sisters here who are just doing their thing. Thanks to every single person that has subscribed to the channel. If you have go ahead and hit that, you know, subscribe button and hit that notification button. Thanks to everyone who is part of our Patreon. And thanks to every single person who supports us through PayPal. You've been, you know, you've made a lot of these things possible, including shooting in New York, which is absolutely awesome. But let me get back to my little story here, because I saw this and I really thought, what are these people smoking? What are people, like, seriously, you want to come and you're proposing voluntary colonialism in Africa? I'm just like, seriously? So I told you guys just before we took the break that this Nobel Prize winner, winning economist called Paul Roma, he came up with this idea of how to develop, to create development in developing nations by having these cities within countries that do not abide to the laws of the nation and that are run by different foreign bodies so that they can, you know, so that they can attract young people, create jobs, etc. And the cities would operate under a set of laws separate from their host countries. I'm serious. I'm not making this up. So, get this. So in 2008, this Madagascar president, and in case you don't know, Madagascar is also part of Africa, but anyway, just, you know. So he's called Mark Ravalomanana, something like that, right? And he tried to implement this plan after meeting Roma. So he thought it would be amazing, you know, to kind of lift up Madagascar from their, you know, developing world status. But the plan backfired so badly on him that not only did the opposition accuse him of treason, but a year later, in 2009, he actually lost the presidency. So this is absolutely crazy. Now, you know, the African Union has called it a lazy answer to the migration challenge, but it should make us all aware that the plan of the colonizer continues. They have never stopped wanting to colonize and neo-colonize us. And they come with fancy words, you know, city within a city. Oh, let's stop your young people from going abroad. You know what will help our young people from going abroad? Stop bringing your military to Africa. Stop, you know, taking all our natural resources. Stop coming with your UN agencies and your development agencies that don't support our people, that actually, you know, because you'll come with your aid, but you won't hire any of the youth. You'll come with your people. Anyway, I'm just like, you know, well, leave your comments. I'm sure you'll leave your comments, but don't forget to like and share the video. This has been Africa Watch, New York City, guys. Okay.
Yeah, man, that sound exactly like what's going on here in America, all over the nation.
And it sounds like China. What did she say? They would operate unto themselves, be a law unto themselves for 50 years. That particular area that they would commandeer would be under the law of the country that signs the lease. So they'll be under German law if it's Germany, or British law if it's Britain, or French law if it's France. And they would have a term of 50 years. So where do you think the Chinese got this brilliant idea of doing all of this building? They're building buildings. They built the African Union headquarters that was found to be completely bugged. They built a huge bridge in Kenya that collapsed last year. I think they're rebuilding it now. And like she said, they send Chinese workers. They don't employ local Africans. So it's like, y'all poverty-stricken folks, y'all stay in poverty. We send the Chinese people to do the job. And the next epidemic is pretty much Chinese men having sex with African women, making these mixed-race babies, and going back to China, leaving the African women with these half-Chinese children. That is practically a new epidemic now. And actually, Face to Face Africa had a brilliant couple of articles about that whole thing with these Chinese men using these African women for a quick fling. And then when either their term is up or if they just want to get away from the sister, they'll just go back home and leave her, you know, just straight up with her behind to the wing with this new child and no father there to help raise the child. So
it was a couple of them that filed a suit, wasn't it?
Yeah, there were a few.
Yeah,
but a lot of them are going to traditional towns where these people don't really know about the cities and the laws too. And in that situation, they just basically stuck with the child because they don't know about going into the city and filing any court claims. They live in the bush and they know nothing but their traditional life for generations. But yes, there are some that have been doing so or attempting to do so, but trying to protect its own too. They really do. When it comes to Chinese people doing things abroad, China looks out for their own, even if they're criminals. I mean, you know, they'll let some go to the wind, but for the most part, if there's something they can do, then, you know, it's known that China does look out for their own people. That's where Minister Malcolm used to talk about how, you know, they used to have a saying in America when he was coming up, you didn't have a Chinaman's chant, and would call people chinks and all this kind of stuff. And he said, as China gained respect, you can't talk to Chinese people like that. Because not just the Chinese people, but the government ain't having that. And he was like, when black people get to that same sort of behavior with each other, and especially if the continent of Africa gets respect, then globally, they're going to have to respect us too. Because at that point, especially now that they're working towards this whole United States of Africa thing, they can just shut down, you know, mineral resources to a country and just cripple the country. So they would have to pretty much respect black people. We would go from being at the bottom to being at the very top, because we have that continent is the richest continent on the planet as far as resources are concerned. That's why it's such a hot commodity. So yeah, it's deep. So that's where Minister Malcolm got that from, when he talked about it on the few occasions that he did in some of his speeches. But it's about colonization, and that's a form of gentrification. And again, it's not just the it's also psychological. If you look at that, for anyone to come up with that as a premise, you have to know that the people are still under psychological domination by white people, because they're turning to the white father and saying, please colonize us again. Come back, colonize us, and give my children education. Really? Excuse me, when has a slave ever gone back to the slave master and said, please re-enslave me, so me and my children can have a shack to stay in and continue to be abused, and my wife get raped every so often? Like the psychology of that made it so deep that for the Chinese, they literally got their own police stations in African countries. It's laughable to even hear this, but it's true. And it's sad. And it's not something that the people want. It's something that the government is doing. So again, the people have to really start banding together to get rid of these puppet rulers and these rulers that have no backbone and are just kowtowing to anybody that has pale skin and an objective. When I say pale, that includes Chinese people. You know, like, you just can't keep doing that. And again, you have to deal with the historical context of the relationship of African people with these other countries. Because some of these other people are just as racist as white people. When you study the history of India and their caste system, they are violently racist, straight up. And only somebody who knows Indian culture and understands Indian history would know that. There's no talking about Gandhi. Gandhi was no beacon of anything positive for black people. He hated black people. He used to call us kafirs or kafirs, which is pretty much nigger in South Africa. Look at the Chinese relationship with black people. They call us all kinds of names and make fun of us over there and do the blackface thing too over there. Like, it's real. Like, you have to understand that historical relationship. And it's not saying all of them are like that, but they have a cultural history and a cultural memory of disrespecting black people. And it goes back to the original Chinese, the ones that they described in the first and second dynasty, the Shang dynasty. They described them as black as night and oily. Their skin was black as night and oily. That's how they described the original Chinese people. And a lot of them live in the South now, and you never see them. People be like, there are black people in China? Yeah, there are. If you go to South China, you'll find them, but they're usually hidden from the public. Just like the black people in India. You don't see the Dalits. They call them untouchable. Then you got, I believe it's the Oromo people. And then there's another one in Bengal, another group of Africans that's been there for, I think, almost 1,000 years now. And they still live their traditional life in India, but you don't see them. You'll see the Brahmin caste or any caste that's not untouchable. And they're racist as all get up now out in India. Matter of fact, because of his connection with what is known as the Dalit Panthers, which is pretty much the untouchable Indian untouchable people's variation of the Black Panther Party. They have one called the Dalit Panthers. And how they learned about the Black Panthers was through Renoko Rashidi, when he was doing all of his trips as a young man, going to India, discovering the African origins of Indian society. He got really close with some of the prominent Indian educators and taught them about the Black Panthers. They ended up eventually creating their version of the Black Panthers. And then the Indian government told him if he ever comes back, they'll kill him. So Renoko Rashidi can't go back to India. And that's something we learned on our trip with him to Kemet back in 2007. He was like, yeah, I can't go to India. The Indian government threatened me because of my relationship with the people who, you know, who are considered untouchable. So that's real. It's really real. But what you wanted to say about that, Jenna?
Nah, you took care of that. We can move on to the next subject now.
Okay. Okay, cool. Let me see the next thing.
I was thinking about this from the Advice show.
Okay. I'm trying to look it up now because I know it's here. I know there's a few that I posted today. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. How the U.S. government. Yeah, that's a good one.
So a lot of people, if you look into the finances, they speak on the great wealth gap between blacks and whites. Why aren't they on the same playing field? Now, the racists would say, well, black people are just lazy. The racists would say black people, all they want is handouts. They don't want to do for themselves. Black people whine and black people just want to be given everything. This is what the racists have to say. And in order for you to understand the argument I'm going to use based on history and based on facts that really even the racists can't dispute, they are the last ones that need to be speaking to black people about anything. Because if anybody got more given to them, more handouts given to them, would be their group. Nobody else has gotten that much before. We're going to travel back in time. And it will also explain to you what is really white privilege they mention. Because see, a lot of people mention white privilege, but you're not articulating it very well based upon history and fact. So we're going to try to do this in this video. We're going to cover three things that the U.S. government has done to give white Americans an advantage over black people or anyone else. If you travel back in time, you will figure this thing out. Now, the first thing, the first program that they had to give white Americans an advantage, it was called the headright system. Now, back in Virginia, 1618, they came up with the headright system. Now, this system was to give 50 acres of land to every person that's head of the household. And they will usually give them between 50 to 100, but they can give them up to 1,000 acres of land. Now, we know this land was Indian territory. How did they get all this land from the Indians? Well, we know that the Indians didn't have firearms and cannons and all this other stuff. So they slaughtered the Indians and took their land, bottom line. Because all this stuff was Native American territory. So if they wanted more people over here that came up with this system and said, listen, if you pay for your voyage to come over here from Europe, we will give you 100 acres of land. You get your 100 acres of land, you could build your farms, you could build your plantations and all this other stuff. And so people got money together and came over here. They got the free land for free, given by the government, completely for free, and they settled here. Now, wealthy people that was already over here, if they brought in servants, indentured servants, and slaves, they would get 50 acres per indentured servant or slaves. That's why they packed those boats so tight on having Africans on top of each other. It's because every African that came over here was 50 acres of land. You know, you get that? So it was a whole lot of money being made on top of the slaves getting here and doing the jobs for free that they did not pay for. Now, you remember when they would say that, well, white people were slaves too? Well, that is more so the Irish that was indentured servants. And those in that time period that came over, a lot of them had came over even with some of the Africans. They had to come work for 5 to 7 years, but they wasn't a slave. Don't get me wrong. They wasn't, but they had to work, they dead off. And after the 5 to 7 years, those indentured servants, Irish, a lot of them, was given land closer to Indian territory, like way away from, all the white settlers. This is what happened to them, but they still got land after they worked their debt off. But the black man and black woman got nothing but misery, pain, and horror. And of course, this stuff was legal at that time period. Now let's bring us to the second thing that got white Americans ahead, the Homestead Act of 1862. The Homestead Act was given by the U.S. government. You could make application. They had all this land for, to just give people, and they gave them land, literally. Black people didn't get this land at all. And if a black person possibly was given a land, it's probably one of the ones who were part of, you know, even from slavery times, they had the black boule, you know, the blacks who are the tokens within their society and they trust and they like and use as a buffer to get a hold to us. But they got ahead by getting all that land. So you had two systems so far that's given nothing but land. And the African didn't get anything at all. In the same year in 1862, when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, he signed it and freed the slaves. But there were 930 slave owners petitioning the U.S. government for a reparation for those slaves. And the U.S. government gave 930 slave owners the amount of money of $300 at that time period per slave. And the U.S. government paid for close to 3,000 slaves. Now, if for every slave, $300 equivalent to our money now is close to $7,200 if you do the inflation calculator. So that's a lot of money that they gave out to them at that time period for losing their slaves. But the black man and black woman didn't get anything. No kind of reparation, no kind of land, nothing. Nothing but death, misery, and pain. Then you come to the most recent thing that happened back in the 1930s all the way up to the late 60s. The redlining program by the FHA and the VA loans, which black people in the military could not get these VA loans. Now, the banks at one point in time weren't lending to nobody, so the FHA, the federal government, came in and said, listen, we'll back this up with our money. So they started giving loans, low interest loans for white people only to get homes because they wanted to create the white middle class. But these white people could not move in certain areas. And so what the banks would do, they would look at the whole city. They'll look at, you know, what they deem as the good areas by color. The blue is the best area. Yellow is kind of declining. They still have some value. And red, it's the bad areas. And most of these red, they call it redlining on the map. They would say, okay, this is where the blacks at. This is a bad area. This is deteriorating. We don't want you nowhere near them. So you're going to move over here to the blue area. And that's where the whites was moving to. Now, no black people had a chance to move to those blue areas. See, the government even created the ghettos, the slums, because no black family could get those loans at all. They had to stay in those deplorable conditions. They had to stay in neighborhoods that was not good, while the white families was given plenty advantage to move to good areas. Like I said, all the way up to the late 60s. So you look at in history, you've been given land upon land. Slave masters were given reparations, and white families was given homes, very, very low interest when the banks weren't loaning to anybody at all. Then you take a group of people who never was given land, who never had a Homestead Act, who never had a redlining program or even be able to participate in the VA loan program to get homes. And then after that, you want to say to those people who never got any of that, they always want a handout. When history shows that who got the most handouts? These people are whining. These people don't work hard. What have you worked hard to do, Mr. or Miss Racist? What have you done? You've given everything in this country. You build everything off of slave labor. Even companies to existence to this day, at least about 240 companies still to this day, had their ties back to slavery. There's what? Millions of people still in this country that's tied to the old slave money. And then if black people say something about reparations, it's a problem. It's not right. It's divisive. It's not fair. Well, it wasn't fair when you was getting all the land, millions of acres of land. It wasn't fair then either, but that's okay. So when you see these things about wealth gaps and things like that, understand it comes from somewhere. Now, I know what some are going to say. I had nothing to do with slavery. I had nothing to do with any of that. Why y'all talking about that? Because everything in this country that's happening today has a lineage to something. So when you say certain things, understand you was given a shot. We wasn't given a shot like that. What? Oh, well, you guys aren't slaves anymore. Oh, okay. Really? We still mental slaves. We still oppressed in a lot of ways. Well, you guys, you know, you're not in the civil rights movement time. No, we're not. But really, has anything changed? Police still killing us. Black people still getting lynched, but they're lying and saying it's suicides. Black people unemployment is high, no different than back, you know, those periods, at least between, when they had segregation, blacks had more jobs because they had to create their own businesses. Okay. But outside of all that, those excuses, everybody else got reparations. They just gave the Holocaust survivors more money as a recent President Obama. The Japanese people got money for being in internment camps. They gave them $20,000 each family. Okay, and they didn't go through slavery. It was just internment camps, right? Native Americans was given, I heard a recent lawsuit of $534 million, which they should get that because look what happened to them. But when the black man and black woman talk about reparations, oh, no, 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 no. Well, you know, you've been getting reparations ever since you got here, but we can't have anything. And that's the thing. We have to keep researching history to understand the difference. If you really want to bring people together, if you want to stop dividing, well, you know what? You have to make right the wrongs of the past. The wise thing to do is make it right. Do like you've done to the Native American and the Japanese and even the Holocaust survivors. Give what you owe, because really it's what you owe. It's all that free labor. It was free. You didn't pay anything. All the murders, all the things that happened to black people. We have been terrorized more than any group of people. You talk about ISIS. ISIS is nothing compared to slave master. ISIS is nothing compared to even some of these police. What are you talking about? I mean, we've been through so much in this country. And we have to know these things in order for us to learn and grow of ourselves. If we stay in the dark, because, you know, they're not going to teach these things in school. They're not going to tell you about the Head Right program. They're not going to tell you about the Homestead Act of 1862. They're not going to tell you about the redlining and VA loan program where blacks can get none of that at all. It was exclusively a racist program. They're not going to tell you that because they would have to tell people that, you know what, we were given an advantage because of the color of our skin, period, and you wasn't because you were black and a piece of crap. They basically would have to say that, but they're not going to say that. And this, what I'm talking about today, you can all go research it yourself. This is about not only educating black people, it's about educating all people to understand why certain things in this country, the way it is. So when black people bring up the term white privilege, that's what they're talking about. You were privileged to get everything. You're privileged to be set up in a certain areas. Even you're privileged with the benefit of the doubt. You're privileged when your kids do wrong, that they can be an individual. But when our kids do wrong, they represent the whole race. Oh, that's how black people are. That's typical of them. But if a white person do it, well, that's just them. That's not all of us. We don't be like that. You know, and if a person do the same thing and make a blanketed statement, then that's so wrong. So it's just things that we have to research and look into. And this is something for you just to be educated on. Because if you really want to, like you say, come together, if you really want to be one people, well, you got to make what's wrong right in order to do that. And if you don't want to make what's wrong right, then it lets you know that you're just an evil person who don't really want to do the right thing. You like the way it is. You like one group being above the other, and you like the advantage of that. And that's fine. You could do that, and I get it. It really doesn't bother me. I've accepted. In this country, there are people who really like the society to benefit one group and not benefit all. I understand that I am a realist. But what I'm doing is just trying to educate you on what got people in that position. That's all. That way, when these people talk to you again and say something about what you don't do and what you want and handouts, you can say, you know what? Let's talk about all the handouts you got. We'll talk about that. Because really, who's the recipient, biggest recipient of affirmative action? It's not black people. Actually, white women are the biggest recipients of affirmative action. But they don't like to even talk about that, you know, because they'll be calling what, actually researching something for yourself? You know, I mean, but that's something we don't do. We just listen to Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and just whatever they say, we go with it as gospel and not doing anything at all to look into things. So, guys, just make sure you look into these programs, research it, teach it to your children. Let them know the true history of this nation and what the U.S. government has done to give advantage to one group and not the other. So we can understand why we still have some issues to this day. And we possibly, hopefully, one day can fix these issues. Well, I don't know. Hit me up in the comments, shoot the commentaries, subscribe.
Yo, excuse me. Another good idea is to go around your local, your little local monuments and read off those plaques or let your children read those plaques of what they mean. Hey, Brother Rod, say it again.
No, I said, I agree. I was saying that, I was going to say that the headright system that was in place in Virginia, that which was the first thing that he talked about, that was prior to the creation of white people. It was like, she said it was like 16, he said it was like 1618. Bacon's Rebellion and the creation of white people didn't happen until 1681. So this was very, very close to the founding of the nation. And at least in Virginia territory, this was codified racism being practiced before the white race was created. And it just hit me as he was going through that. I was like, oh, wow, so this is actually pre the creation of white people. But yet there was codified racism surrounding land being strictly given to white people. And then what did I say? I said that we were the dollar. We were worth our weight in gold. For every slave that they bought from the African continent, you were given up to 50 acres of land. George Washington owned 350 slaves. Times that by 50 acres, a lot of land. And out of all of the presidents, he had the largest number of slaves out of any of the presidents that owned slaves. So it's a lot of food for thought. And again, it has to do with gentrification. They're commandeering land. And what he talked about with the third incident where he was talking about city planning, if you go to your local city planning office, you can get a look at the maps because they map where the ghettos are going to be. Like you said, the red line, they map where the decent areas are that are in decline, but you know, they're still workable. And then they outline the blue areas, which is where they have the white people live. And they've been doing this for hundreds of years in this country. And I remember it was Tony Browder in the first Hidden Colors. He lives in D.C. And he said in some instances, they plan hundreds of years in the future. But he's seen it as up to at least 50, I think, and as short as 5 years ahead in his local city planning area in D.C. So know that they plan where you're going to live. They plan for poverty to be in all in one area and for these black people to be in those areas specifically. And then the realtors and everybody else work around that to make sure that that's where you end up. And it's been documented throughout this country and in other parts of the world that communities thrive with a mixed population economically, meaning you have poor people in the neighborhood. You have middle-class people, you have upper-middle-class, and maybe a few affluent people thrown in the mix. They said crime drastically reduces. And not only that, but the children get to see people with legal jobs doing things that they can aspire to rather than seeing just the guy on the corner. So understand, they understand the full psychology of keeping you in an impoverished state and keeping you surrounded by nothing but other impoverished people. they understand that that's going to create a crime situation that's completely untenable for the people who live in that area. So all of your misery is literally puppet mastered, and you have no idea about it. You just think, yeah, this the hood. This way. Nah, they made that the hood. Because when I go back to Brooklyn, my hometown, and I go to some of the places that were considered the most dangerous places in America at times and in New York State to be, and I see white and Chinese people everywhere, and they running out with the white women walking their dogs at 3 a.m, and nothing happens to them, and they feel ultimately safe, you know, walking around areas in Harlem that people were horrified to go down. They just wouldn't. If you didn't know nobody there, you had no reason to be on the block. That's the type of areas that they're all over those places now. So that should give you proof positive that it's being orchestrated. The fact that an area can go from being some of the poorest, most crime-ridden areas to now you got Whole Foods and Starbucks on every corner and gourmet places to eat where people spending at a minimum $100 just to sit at the table in some of these places. And just 20 years ago, well, when I was a child, 30 years ago, these places were places that only black people and some really impoverished white people and Latinos were. And nobody else would come to that neighborhood, like I said, without a purpose or unless you knew somebody there. So understand further, this is just proof positive that your misery is orchestrated by the people who really are the white supremacists. A lot of the people we encounter, they want to be white supremacists. And that means that they're the people that Lyndon Johnson talked about in the quote. And he was like, basically, poor white people can be fooled into thinking they're superior just by gathering their consciousness around the concept of white being white. You can treat them like black people are treated. But as long as they think they're white and they're involved in that white identity, then they don't even care about being abused. They just want to be white. So they're not treated like a nigga, excuse my, you know, my use of the term. But
That's the fact.
So the real white supremacists are the ones who plan your city years in advance. The ones who change your reality at the stroke of a pen, signing some sort of law or some draft of some law or something that ruins you or your family or intergenerationally ruins people's lives around you. Those are the real white supremacists. The other ones are minions who work for the white supremacists, and they function like ants. That's why when you see a black person get into a argument with a white person, you'll see all little ants come around. All the white people know, codify around protecting that white life. We're going to get this black person right now. And black people say, oh, let me pull out my camera. I'm about to get it. Psychology. How white people, and they don't have to know each other. All they need to do is hear elevated vocal tones coming from another white person, and the person that they're speaking in an elevated way towards is black. And they naturally know, let's coalesce around that white person. Because if something hit the fan, we're going to stomp them out. And black people, they'll be right there, just like the black girl and the black guy was at Nipsey Hussle's mural in Connecticut, filming the white girl spray painting it. So the dead can't even get respect. And then there's even no black self-respect in them saying, look, you shouldn't be doing that or attempting to stop it or anything. They just talking and laughing and giggling. I ain't going to jail. It was the most ridiculous video I'd ever seen and the most disrespectful video. But that just goes to show you that they understand the psychological control they have over us to the point where anything goes, man. China could build a police precinct right on African soil. Nobody says nothing. White girl could spray paint a mural for somebody who was respected in the community. They put it up as a memoriam to him, and she does it on camera, gives all her Facebook details, everything, and the black people just stand there and film. Wow. So that's what gentrification looks like. When they know they got you psychologically, just like we played in the video, how the predatory Jewish landlord who talked about the fact that they steal these black people's houses at dirt cheap, jack up the prices double, kick the black people out, and the black people have no concept that because they signed something and didn't understand what they signed, that they have a legal recourse to go back and claim their property. because they got it from the psychological control. The white man's always right. He paid me for the land. He gave me $10,000 if it's East New York, because that's how much it costs for a house in East New York. White man could go knock on the door, offer them 10 grand, and they'll take it and leave. He kicks them out, and the people who were paying $1,000 rent prior to, he jacks it up to $2,700, $2,800 a month, and puts white people in. Then the black people come back, and they think they can't claim their property because the white man gave them 10 grand and fooled them into signing their deed over without them understanding exactly what they were doing. And you're legally not able to do that. If a person is just like having somebody who's mentally ill, if they're retarded, and you tell them, yo, sign you know, your life over to me, it's not going to stand up in court because the person isn't mentally capable of understanding what they were doing. And it's the same thing with a lot of these people in black neighborhoods. They don't know. Some of them can't read. You know, all they're hearing is money, more money than they heard since the crack era. So in their mind, $10,000 is $10 million. Sure, I'll take it. Now you got to get the hell out. And then they move white folks in, jack up the price, and then the Jews will make money until the bank reclaims the property. And that usually takes 5 to 7 years. So he's making 5 to 7 years worth, let's say, four tenants in a building, and the building is paying $2,800 per tenant per month for 5 years. And then once the bank reclaims it, he just moves the people out. They get kicked out. He keeps his money. Nobody, no harm, no foul, and that's it. That's the racket.
Man,
so a lot of this is psychological, and it turns into economics. It turns into control of your area as far as black people controlling their actual space and having a place where they can have a community and build a culture. You go to Harlem now, almost all the drumming is gone. We used to drum every Sunday. You have people go to different areas of Harlem. They would collect in groups and play African drums. It was a ritualistic thing, and women would come out with something really nice that's traditional, and they would dance and just have, like, literally mini ceremonies. Every Sunday you could see that. You could hear the drums. White people move in. Oh, these niggas playing this drumming crap. It's too loud. This is not Africa. Cut that out. Now they can't play the drums no more. They're being chased away by the police like crazy. There's no culture there. The culture is being shut down by the invaders, the anthropomorphic cancer that moves into the community and says, look, this is my spot now. But that's how white supremacy works. I keep telling people, Europeans were not sedentary people. They lived in a cold, harsh environment, so they had to be on the move all the time, chasing game, chasing animals to hunt for meat and to wear their skins as clothes. So that's why they never developed studying the stars or mathematics or sciences or anything, because they were constantly on the move. People who are on the move have no time to contemplate, to think, to develop anything. Africans spent millions of years in the same place, developing agriculture and all other sciences we know that they did. So Europeans have flipped that now. They created a system to keep us moving all the time, racial dislocation. So we can never sit down and become the great people we were meant to be because we're never settled.
That's
and white people live in the same places for decades and build off of the knowledge that we created. Go ahead, Jenna. I'm sorry.
No, my bad. I just want to welcome this caller. We got a caller calling in. Caller, where you calling from? What's your name? What's your name?
I'm calling from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. This is Sister Sharon.
Greetings,
Sister Sharon. Peace and love.
Good evening, Brother Ross and Brother Jenna. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy listening to you, and you're just so on the money. You're on the point. First of all, Brother Jenna, the gentrification thing, I hope I can maybe shed some light for you that might assist you. It's true what Brother Ross said about, you know, the realtors are also hooked up with the trickery, but you can engage a realtor and have him look into a particular property that you might have your eye on and be interested and let him do that paperwork of seeing whose name is on it and how you could secure it. You know, although, as I said once before, sometimes it's a corporation on there or a developer or someone, but you still can do that without any cost because a realtor does have to assist you without charging you for that. So that's, you know, one way to look into it. I'm so disturbed to hear about what's happening in Africa with the Chinese. Well, they are called the dragon. And it does bother me. It's just so sad. I mean, these people, you know, why are you there? Are your purposes for good or is it for your gain? And with all of this building they're doing, it seems as though it'll just be an open freeway for any nationality or country to just go backwards and forwards into Africa, just as if you were visiting Beverly Hills or Europe. Just, you know, you have the train. I think someone told me they were trying to build a railroad or a train. So
yeah, I think with Kenya and a couple other countries, yes.
Yeah, it is disturbing, you know, to hear that this is what's happening. But then I do understand the corruptness of the politicians in the motherland. But it is just like, wow, you know, I have to say this, what I'm seeing, and I'm a baby boomer. I'm a recent, you know, worker. I put my time in, my husband did, but just changes that are taking place among our people, it does sadden us. And it wasn't easy for us, but I mean, you know, our time had its issues, but I always have to try to lay a groundwork for my grandchildren. You know, we paved the way for our children, supposedly, but our grandchildren, you know, and still, you know, my children, trying to set them up to be able to deal and be equipped with this world. But the colonizer is just like this evilness, this possession. So, you know, learning languages, I think it's important. This world they're presenting to us, you know, I saw it when I heard the Chinese were in Africa. Well, you know, something we could do as a people is, you know, languages is important, you know, not just the Romanic languages, but our children need to be able to speak, you know, the Slavic or some Asian languages. Because in 2008, when the bailout happened, I said to myself and my family, I said, we're either going to be speaking Mandarin or Russian. And I start becoming a mini prepper at that time. A survivalist, in other words. I just start trying to stock up on things because 2008, that bailout, that's never left me. You know, the things that I'm seeing taking place in the world since 2008. So, you know, you two young brothers, be encouraged. You have the knowledge. You know what's going on. That's a form of survival. So many of us, older and younger, are clueless. You will withstand storms. Just don't ever get discouraged. Always say to yourself, I have a knowledge no one can take from me. That's just like having a weapon, you know, and keep that in your mind because it's important for you and your loved ones that you have this knowledge. So I just, you know, I said, well, I'll call in. You know, I enjoy listening to you. You know, your knowledge, you bring so much to the table. You are correct. You know, you guys have it on the ball. I don't blame Brother Jenna for, you know, thinking about how you could maybe secure a property. Don't give up on it. That's one way he can do it. An agent has to do the legwork for you, and it's free of charge. So, I just, you know, wanted you to know that, you know, we have to collectively think of each other. We have to think about our young people in your age group. We have to, you know, we have a responsibility as people in my class. We have a responsibility. You're absolutely right about the neighborhoods. Yes, my police department is ran by the Jews. And okay, it's true. All of what you're saying is very true, you know. It is what it is, but the Chinese, I don't know. So, you know, you brothers have a good evening and keep it going on.
Thank you. You too. And if you do want to chime in at any point, you know, just feel free to just let us know. And you can come back at any point.
Well, I have a question.
Go ahead, what you going to say, Jim?
I have a question, Ms. Cher.
Sure.
You said when you look, you're disappointed in the state of our people now. Is there a certain point that you can remember when everything changed from when you grew up to what you see now? Is there a certain moment?
Yeah, I can. I can.
What is that then?
You know, after the civil rights thing, it was, the doors were open for black men, you know, young men, to go to school, come to school. My husband took advantage of that. Okay, I had parents that could handle it, but he took advantage of that, and many of, you know, our friends did. So you had the black, the brothers in the jobs, okay, wheeling and dealing. And it seems as though the late 70s, my last child was born in the 80s, but the late 70s, things start flipping. I sent my daughter, well, we sent, allowed my daughter to go to school in France for a semester, and she came home telling us, you know, things and how it was there, how the Algerians were having such trouble with the French. And she was in a suburban area, you know, that's where her undergrad school had their campus. And the late 70s is when I saw things really turning. The job thing, you know, we didn't count as much. I worked for the feds, but we weren't as promoted to be in certain positions, to have certain jobs, you know, and the neighborhood thing, that's always been an issue. You know, it wasn't easy for me coming to a 90, might as well say 97%. European suburb, but I had to think about my children. They're always first, and my grandchildren are first. Black people have to also get on the ball with that. We have a responsibility to our young people, those of us who naturally brought them here, and whether we did or not, that we are a race of people, and we have to change our thinking. And I hold the boomers responsible, the Afro-American boomers. They could do better. Yeah, you know, I received some information today because I joined the AD conference, and it's 48 million of us here in this country. Only 5,000 have signed on board for that. But anyway, that's when I saw things changing, Brother Jenna, the late 70s. And then, of course, I forgot. Okay, when did Reagan came in the early 80s, right?
Yes, he did.
Yes,
okay, but that's when things actually start changing, the late 70s. And as I said before, you know, the Nation of Islam during this period of the late 60s, the 70s, you know, they were putting things out for us. At least we had that as a race of people. That was better than nothing to try to, you know, enlighten our people. But you know, it wasn't for everybody, but I just have this thing because I was brought up that way. I don't turn my nose up at a black man, at a brother. If they say, hey, sister, let me show you this, or can I tell you this? I don't. Yeah, you know, I mean, unless they look like somebody that is going to stick me up or has a gun on them or whatever, but I just don't do that because there's been too much of that in our race. And so the Nation of Islam was enlightening people, and I always was a seeker. Even when I was in my 20s, I was a seeker. Many of us in our race aren't. We it's like we got the bag and we ran. And that's what's happening, you know, not just in denial, but we got ours, and so that's it. I'm comfortable. I feel halfway safe. Well, we're not safe. I mean, you know, I'm okay, really. I have to thank my ancestors for that and my parents, but I don't feel safe. That's the thing. Honestly, I do not feel that way. I think about my children who are younger than you, Brother Ross. I think about my children. I think about my grandchildren. I'm sure it's my ancestors that have always been with me. I don't feel safe in America, and I don't want to be someplace where there's more colonizers. So I, you know, but I can tell you that is absolutely the period when things start changing, and they weren't changing slowly either. It wasn't slow. It was rapid. You know, so, you know, I mean, Yeah, I've had a lot of experiences in this world. You know, some, you know, I guess some would consider fortunate, but I don't. It's just that this is not the world I planned for my children or my grandchildren. And that's why I support you guys and any organization that's worthy, because some, it has to be better. It just can't keep being like this. Wow. And even if it's just knowledge, even if, it, you know, knowledge is power, it has to be better. So what, you know, sometimes I wonder if some of our people are saying, well, they killed Martin. Oh, they killed Malcolm. So that's it? Are you crazy? Are you serious? Somebody has to pave a way. And I know everybody won't hear the beat of that drum. It can't be everybody. But, I mean, where really are those that do hear it? Because I've always heard it. And it was drilled in me. You know, my grandmother was African. My mother's people were abolitionists. So I couldn't win. I can't be any different than I am. Yeah. And so, you know, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm a descendant of the Stills, William Still.
Wow.
So they don't know. They don't realize the importance of this. So this was drilled. You know, this was drilled in my family. We know who we are. We have a responsibility we can't negate because of that. I have to be loyal to my ancestors. It's a part of who I am. My mother and father, I can't explain to anybody. Neither one of them went to church. Neither one. I do not profess to a religion. I gave up red meat, my husband and I, almost 30 years ago. I don't eat chicken. The only thing I can stomach is turkey at Thanksgiving. Yes, I still do that for my children and grandchildren. No, it's not all the hullabaloo, but I can do turkey. But I believe the thing about the food. That's why I've been doing it for so many years. We have to get off this food. We're walking around. We're so obese. Our children are obese. And we're not thinking about this whatsoever. And these stores that they put in our neighborhoods. But our people just keep giving them our money. And I don't know. You know, I have family in the inner city. Well, Philadelphia, they think they live in affluent neighborhoods. But nothing is affluent anymore to me over there. It's just like off the chain. People are not handling what's happening to them, and they don't understand what's happening to them. That's why people like you and your programs are important, because they don't really understand what's happening to them.
It's by design.
And you know, the incident I had with these Hebrews, honestly, I didn't understand what it meant, what's the difference, whatever. And just because the brother said, hey, sister, can I show you this? You have a minute. Let me enlighten you, whatever words, you know, to use. And I said, okay, well, I wasn't the only person standing there. There were some other sisters and brothers standing. And I said, okay, well, if you have a plan for that, I'll take you. Well, my downfall was I didn't know the Bible. I don't know the Bible. I don't know what's in Matthew or whatever these different books. I don't know what's in there, honestly. And so I got called in the street as I'm leaving, and no one stood up for me, our people. I got called the daughter of an Edomite. So I had to come home and look it up.
Wow. Yeah. That's the name pretty much.
But I don't know the Bible. I don't. My dad and my mom was very comfortable every Sunday just having a nice big dinner, no church ever. Until their late years, when their health got bad, you know what they started saying? Oh, I sure hope it's nothing to this religion thing, because we're in trouble, you know. But anyway.
You know, you said that because my father-in-law did the opposite. He was a devout churchgoer for most of his life, and towards the end, he was completely disgusted with, you know, everything. He was just like the way, especially his church, and he'd been to quite a few, and all of them had different scandals. And he was just like, you know, at the end, he was like, no, you know, he even said, I want an African funeral. Like, he's like, I don't want nothing to do with that.
And well, that's weird. Good. That's yeah. funny, but it's good too. Yeah. And I was like too late. I told my parents, too late. You should have wow. did it or started. You know, I was just teasing them, but yeah. So, you know, that's why I'm somewhat, you know, it does wake you up a little, you know, makes you look at things a little differently. But anyway, yeah. Brother Jenna, that's when it really starts slipping for real. It's like when they opened that door for school, it was like by the late 70s, they were closing doors. And those doors, it wasn't just education. It was also like banks, you know, housing. You know, it was almost like they looked like, wait a minute, what did we do here? So, you know, but I'm a fighter. You know, you're going to tell me no, and I had the adequate down payment? You're going to show me why I can't put my children in this neighborhood? And I know doggone well on paper I can afford it. You know, so, and it is. You do have to fight. You know, that's what it's been for us as a race of people. We can't get lazy. You have to fight. And I don't fight my own people. That's the last people I ever want to go after, because I do believe in the code. But you have to fight them. You can't let them get away with anything. I went to my neighborhood library. I've been a card-carrying library member all my life. So I went to my local library. It's very close to my home. It's gorgeous. Elevator, cafe, you know, cafe like a Starbucks, everything. And I said, where are the Afro-American books? So I was looked at like, okay, Black History Month is over. And I said, so are you telling me you warehouse them and then you bring them back in February? Well, I guess a supervisor heard me raise my voice a little bit. As I say, I pay $10,000 in taxes. I don't care about these people here. So I guess she heard me raise my voice, and she must have been within earshot. Someone came scurrying over. Ma'am, can we help you? I said, I asked a very simple question. And so then she told her, no, they're going to the computer. And okay, so then they directed me to what aisle, because the library is huge. Right. So I wasn't going to be trying to walk in and, you know, looking and all. So anyway, they had 10 books on the shelf. None of them, of course, I didn't expect that. None of them was related to the things you have discussed, Brother Ross. So I didn't want to pick up. You know what they were? Our famous people in entertainment and sports. That type of book.
It's like watching TV, but in the library. You're just getting the same stuff. Entertainment, sports. Yep. Wow.
Yeah. And 10 on the shelf. But that's the area of study that they were on. So, you know, I left. But I said, you know, I'll try, because I understand the Jew. I've been around them most of my life. I know how their mind operates. So I said, well, you know what? They might have a few or something in here. Not exactly the things that you suggested to the audiences, but maybe something. So anyway, you know.
Sometimes
but like
do
I said. Excuse me?
I was saying sometimes they do, because especially like if you go to college libraries, they'll have depending on the college, they'll have like a nice African American section of text, and
well,
you might
I'm sure
find
that.
Some good text in it, because they really have removed a lot of this stuff from public access. So even if
to
like Barnes and Nobles or you go to your local library, depending on where you live, especially if it's not like, let's say, a heavy amount of Black people in the area, you're not going to find a lot of Black centered books at all. And like I keep telling people, that is always a sign of when a society is coming to such a point of deterioration that they're going to seek the most vulnerable people to abuse, and that is Black people. And if you study
that's
what happened to the Jews, I keep repeating it, that's the first thing they did. They took their books away, then they took their guns away, then it was concentration camps. And Black people are missing that sign. It is a crucial sign. There's no Black radio. There's no terrestrial Black radio. There's no Black bookstores anymore. Amazon and other, Amazon is the main one. I don't know about others, but it could be. But Amazon is removing black text that they
deem, they are. I did. They checked Amazon.
They deem it to be either fake information or racist or something, and they're removing it. But the only people's books that are being removed are black people's books.
Yeah.
You still got got stuff dealing with pedophilia. Amazon is still selling it. No one's saying anything. But when it comes to the black text, they're disappearing. So this is stuff that needs to be propagated, because like you said, a lot of our people don't know. But go ahead, what are you going to say?
But you know what I feel too? I feel that there's a real overabundance of confidence in the colonizer. You know, Brother Jenna, that has been, to me, the last few years, it seems as though they're really getting overly confident. Like, you can just do anything to us. Just like, you know, you telling me, well, ma'am, it's not Black History Month. Well, okay, I live out here, you know that. And what do you think, I'm an idiot?
You know what the confidence, what's bringing that confidence out in America is Donald Trump's presidency.
It was
Obama being elected. That's when the...
Well, true.
And it
that's when the
anger
skyrocketed.
Yeah, it was anger. And then when Donald Trump came, it became confidence. But go ahead, Michelle. My apologies.
Yeah. Well, Obama, he has the same skin color, but there's just some things I was, you know, somewhat disappointed in, unfortunately. But, you know, it is what it is. Our people have a bad habit, though, of allowing people to tell them who to vote for, you know, whether it's a friend, a neighbor, or a politician. And if you can't figure out, or you don't have to read, but just if you're listening to this individual who's a candidate, no matter what position he's running for, if you can take the time to listen to him a couple of times so you can get an idea of what his platform is or her platform, perhaps you can make a wise decision. But going off of the recommendations of anyone other than yourself, that's all the purpose of the vote. That to me is an individual thing. My husband and I don't always agree on candidates in certain office throughout the years. No one should tell you who they think you should vote for, whether it's a spouse or a parent or what have you. So, that's what I was taught. So you guys, let you go. Thank you once again. You know, I want to help keep the program going. And I sent a Gmail to Brother Lance.
Okay. Yeah, I know he's out of
congratulations. Yeah, I know. I was shocked when I saw that. But I just wanted to, you know, congratulate him and wish him well. And I sent him, you know, a donation. And so it's just, you know, it's so funny just looking at, you know, his travels and all. It's interesting. I find him to be a very charitable person. And,
He has his African name now, too.
Yeah, he means well. And so I wish him well. So I just had to say something to him because I know his intentions are good. And so, you know, so you can let him know. You know this lady. He doesn't know me, but you let him know you know me. But I wanted him to know the goodness of what he has done. That is some good to that. And I wanted him to hear from this strange lady that it is appreciated and it is some good to it.
I will definitely let him know that. I haven't talked to him while he was there. I've been talking to him in the chat on some of his videos. And on one video, he actually said a lot of what I discussed with him personally and on the show about certain aspects of African culture, he said, I'm seeing it. Everything he said, Ross, I'm seeing it on the ground. He said it's really profound. So I can't wait to hear what he's talking about. He said he has a lot to share with everybody. But I know that he's going to be happy to hear what you're saying today. I'll definitely pass that on to him. I don't know if I'll hear from
him. I don't know where our people a good bit of our people have such a fear in them, and some of it is understandable, because when you have to be a descendant of slavery, when you have to go through the different periods in our history, it's enough to shake, you know, any human being, you know, possibly. So I try to, you know, give our people that much, but we can't always give them a pass either, because some of them is just blatant, not caring. You thinking that this colonizer is going to carry you or be whatever you think they are to you to the end of times. And that's their personal prerogative. But the African culture being, you know, somewhat docile, or they're not, they need to be reeducated. But then again, is there something within them that they've been used to this for so long at first hand?
They've been colonized longer than America has.
It was
a certain form of codified brutality, specifically in North America.
Absolutely.
And they dealt with the same thing. It was just a lot longer. And even today, when you talk about the puppet rulers, a lot of people don't know that every country that was colonized in Africa, those colonizers still have military bases in those African countries. And that is one of the main driving forces for these puppet rulers to do what they call. So a lot of Black Americans will say, oh, these Africans don't control their politics. They don't. Because if they don't do what the colonizer wants, you don't think that military base is going to be actively, you know, pursuing people violently to get them out of office and replace them with a new puppet? That's what it's there for.
Absolutely.
So America is the same thing. The difference is the politicians look like you, but they work for white people in America. The same thing over there. The politicians look like the Black people, but they work for the white people who run those military bases and those political offices behind the scenes. And everybody got to do what they're told. But there's this
story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. But you know what? I want Brother Jenny to hear this. You know what? We should not think ourselves so lucky here in America, because it's a shred of difference between our brothers and sisters in Africa and here in America, what we have missed out on, what we have had to suck up. I had Spike Lee's shirt, 40 Acres and a Mule, when my daughter lived in New York City. His store was down the street from her. And I purchased that now. That's been many eons ago when Spike Lee had his store in Fort Greene. I had that shirt. I had a red shirt, 40 acres and a mule. So therefore, we haven't gotten any of those things. So we can't really think, you know, like I said, I'm a little shaky, because I don't feel as though we've been given such a glorious life here in America. We are, you know, some ways, of course, are better, but I'm talking about major things that have slid by us, that they've snatched from us, major things. You know, these so-called major bills and laws that you never enforce, you never intended to enforce, and so we've had to stomach that. So we have to kind of think about that, you know, and that's why it disturbs me to know that the Chinese are there like that, you know, because, yeah, it's just like a mirror for us here in America.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, Brother Ross and Brother Jenna.
No, you can't leave us just yet.
But you be encouraged. You got it. You keep in your mind what I said. Just think about it. You guys are walking around conscious. Whatever happens, you'll be able to get over it, whatever. Anyone, you know, rubs you the wrong way, whatever, you know what you say to yourself, you idiot. You don't even know what's going on. I know what's going on. That is important that you do that, because you will have people that rub you the wrong way because they don't get it. They don't get many things. Well, see, I was a young hippie. I was called Angela Davis when I was in my 20s. So great. And I'm far from it. Far from it. I mean, I always was a secret door, all of this, but, you know, it's still this in me. You know, I think the ancestors that I do recognize, at least I try to. So that's what I want you to keep in your mind. That knowledge you have, you know what's up, and no one can take that out of you.
Well, Michelle,
and you walk proud with that. Walk proud with it. I do. My children do.
I have one more question for you before we leave. We're getting ready to cut out of here. So my question is, in this day and time, I picked that same era that you did. That was nice. But my reasons great. Were for communication. So my question to you is for the parents, grandparents, and what have you, who have questions or have knowledge that they want to share with their grandchildren, but they might be afraid. I mean, with the children nowadays, how would you, what kind of information would you give them about helping them to pass that information?
Oh, okay. Well, being afraid, I mean, you know, I understand where you're coming from when you use that vernacular, but from the time my grandchildren were born, you know, I instilled it in my children, but I told them, you are the grandchild of Sharon, who in turn was the granddaughter of Hannah Guillaume. You are African. We come from a different place. Your grandpa, you have to tell, this is the story. Tell them, I would tell them my mother and father. And see, we saved things, our records, everything, photographs, newspaper clipping, all of that. So this is your ancestor. This is, you're going to hear, you might hear this name in school. Well, if you need to, my mom will let you take it to school. These things. And you have to tell them who they are, who they come from, even as close as the next generation after you, your parents, no matter what. Pop-pop works so-and-so, pop-pop, or mom this. That's building, that record is also building identity. And then we have to set our children and grandchildren up for this world that is before them. I put my children in music school so they could, I put them in the basics first. You're going to learn what every language sounds like, I mean, every instrument sounds like and what it does. I sent my boys for golf lessons with two semi-pro famous golf instructors. I got them horseback riding, tennis, Arthur Ashes, put out the first tennis school, and I sent them to that. Swimming, we have to equip them for the colonizer. And we can't change right now. This is the world that they're in. And then my oldest grand, we started language. We invested the money in Rosetta tapes and Slavic and Asian languages. We have to, you know, we have to think outside the box because they're always thinking outside the box on us. So it's just something that I thought we would do the same thing for our grandchildren because we did it with our children, and our children would do the same thing with their children. My children have African names. My grandchildren have African names. Now, my generation, many of us didn't bother to do that. But I knew that my children would not have European names. They would not. You know, my colonizer were French and Portuguese. My biological grandfather was our colonizer. Okay, so I learned early what goes on among the races. So these are the things that I would suggest. And they're easy things. Some of them are easy things, but many of our people, I suspect some of them don't do that. It doesn't. My father worked for Roman Haas, a chemical plant. He didn't work in an office. He didn't have to wear a suit. He made good money. However, that's important to tell a grandchild, your pop-pop worked here. This is what your pop-pop, and one of my uncles also worked there. So these things are important because they know their history. They don't have to really, you know, have many conversations and all about it. They know their history. Many of us don't. We do not. We can't go back. We have nothing we don't know. And that's not always our fault. But we have a joke in our family. And we say, who's your granddaddy? sometimes we run up on some people, and that's what we say in our mind, or if we're together, yeah, who's their granddaddy? Because, see, we knew who our granddaddy was. And they know who their granddaddy was. So, you know, our grandfather, he lived in the same town, and he was affluent. My grandmother was, whatever traumatized her, she was not a grand, she wasn't grandmother like me. And I had to realize, as my father said, she was always like that. And as I grew and became a young woman and got knowledge, then I understood why. She had no choice in things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not ashamed to say so. My grandparents, they were not married. They couldn't be married. And we thought, we were trying to find in my family, why are some of us getting these crazy diseases that you've never heard of? And we did for my grandmother. It was not her. We never thought, because our grandfather wasn't like everyone else's grandfather. He didn't live with us. We couldn't call him grandfather or granddad. The diseases came from him. We did the DNA. We did our uncle. My cousin did her father, my father's brother, and it came up German. And that's where the diseases came from. And one of my grandchildren is subject to that DNA. It's just ugly. People, you know, the people who think this colonizer, the things they do, and that it's okay and it's not real traumatic. And I felt lousy. I felt lousy because I knew where this was coming from. My grandchildren, two of my grandchildren were born in NYU. And when NYU was like, Miss, Little Miss, what is your mother and your father? You better get a hold of somebody, got to tell her something. This shouldn't be. Well, so it's, you know, so I don't.
Yeah, those genetics, just like with Bob Marley, that's, it was his white father's genetics that left him susceptible to melanoma. My mother, she has a white Jewish ancestor, and she inherited Tay-Sachs disease. And she lost about,
I have a friend.
I think about either 6 or 8 children she lost. And it was due to that disease. And it, that, and it's funny because when we moved into the house that her mother used to live in, we pretty much inherited that house. And when we moved here, she had a bunch of silver stars of David, like that people would wear.
Yeah.
And my wife was like, where did these come from? And it's because my mother knew that, you know, her daughter had Jewish heritage. She just never really talked to her about it. And it was through her losing all these children that she found out genetically, yes, you know, she does have Jewish heritage, rather than her mother actually telling her this. So I know exactly what you mean about those, you know, those genetic diseases that are inherent in you know, that group, and they show up in your family. It's like, okay, now I see. It's the same thing with the Rh factor. That's the reason why it's like 7 to 8% of Black American females have Rh factor, and it's due to you know, the white people who may have either raped an ancestor, or if they happen to, you know, be with someone, if it's one of their later ancestors that happen to, you know, marry and be with one, they'll inherit that factor from the genetic mix of the white relative with their Black relative, whichever one it is. So
and these stories, you know, these stories exist in a small population of us, but they exist, and they can be painful. I went into the finest hospital in Pennsylvania, and I went because I had a mole, and my family just kept saying, it was on my forearm, and they kept saying, why don't you get that looked at? Why do you keep not dealing with that? That is not you. And I went to a dermatologist, and he told me, you won't be leaving. He said, after I finish the initial stuff with you, he said, because I have to take this off, and I have to take it off right away, and I have to send it to pathology. I had melanoma on my arm. So these things that, you know, that happen to us, they're ugly, they're not pleasant, and they're the result of these kind of things. And we have to really unite. We have to think before we offend one another. We have to try to think quickly. Okay, can I let this go? Or can I maybe look at, maybe they're a little mental, maybe you something, or walk away, because
like I said, minimize contact and minimize conflict. And I got that from Lily Fuller. And I wanted to say to you, you should wear or utilize shea butter. It is an extremely great.
Oh, I do use shea butter.
Okay, good. Because that's one of the things that our people have used for thousands upon thousands of years.
And I've used shea butter for years.
And good. And skin repair and black soap would be the other half as far as
black
the bathing.
Black soap also. My children keep me very informed. Yes, black soap, I've been using that for a few years.
Well, I wanted to tell you, if you go on Amazon.com and put in black soap and colloidal silver, there is one company that makes black soap that's infused with 500 parts per million colloidal silver. Colloidal silver is a killer of malignant melanoma. That's documented.
Really? I've been intending to get the silver. Really? Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
They're both infused together? That's phenomenal.
Matter of fact, email me, and I'll send you the link directly to it. And then also, they sell it on Amazon, too. They have 10,000 parts per million colloidal silver cream, and the highest dose they have is 35,000 parts per million. So
absolutely, because you know what? I'm paying $45. Mm-hmm. I'm paying $45 for my dermatologist makes up and produces this sunscreen because it's more than what you can get over the counter. Mm-hmm. And it may be an 8 ounce, but it costs me $45. And I know what you're saying about the CBD oil. It is good. I pay $60 a little droplet bottle for that because I have a place in my neighborhood. Like where I live, it's like everything's here. I mean, that's how they live. But
yeah.
Anyway, I'm definitely going to do the Amazon thing with the silver. I had all intentions of getting the silver. As I told you, I don't frown on things. I'll try something as long as it's not going to kill you, whatever, you know, have an open mind. Our people have to open their mind. I will email you, but
you
I want to also. Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. So just email me and then I'll actually get everything together for you and I'll send it to you. I'll also dig up the articles on silver killing malignant melanoma, even the deadliest forms of melanoma. That's documented, so I'll send you those articles as well so you can see it for yourself.
Oh, great.
And then
great.
I'll send you the link to the cream, and I'll send you the link to the black soap that has the...
Yeah, no problem. I'll definitely purchase it because I'm a Prime member. I'll definitely purchase it. But Brother Jenna, institute those things, pass that on. It is important. They're not unimportant things. It is important. Sometimes when children are in school and they may be in the elementary years or the middle school years, you know, conversations take place among our children that we're not privy to. And somebody might say something like, oh, my grandmama, my grandfather, or my aunt or whatever. So give them a history. It will serve a purpose. Yeah, I had a great aunt that was a nurse. She was already into aloe way before we were. She knew things. You know, she fought and busted down doors to go to school. So, yeah, we tell them. That's what I suggest. And anything that you can find to put them in something to enhance them, not only the identity of us, something with my family, we know both sides. And that's... It works for you sometimes. We have to know who our enemy is. We have to know them also. We have to know them as well as we can. Because no matter whether we want to live near them, whatever, we need to know them. Because they exist and they know us too well. But we need to know them. In my lifetime, I've heard many blacks say, oh, I don't, and these are intelligent people. I don't care about whatever. You need to know your enemy.
Dr. John Henry Clark used to beat that in our head almost.
My dad taught us that.
We went to see him. He was like, you need to know your enemy and know them
well.
Because they know you better than you know yourself.
Exactly.
And when you know them, you can think of ways of conquering them. But if you don't know them, then you're basically dealing with a stranger, and as a result, you're going to make uninformed choices. And I think for a long time, we've made uninformed choices because we've been brutalized into, believing what they've told us and brutalized into accepting them as our our dominators and our leaders. Not all of us, but enough of us that this is our reality. And yeah. ultimately, as a result, we're living the after effects of it. And their comfort comes from knowing that we've been psychosocially conditioned collectively to accept our place. And
Absolutely.
That's where their comfort comes from. And when yes. the few of us that yes. do think differently and act on the fact that we're not tolerating it, you find those people in the news because they stand out.
Definitely.
The ones who don't have it, they stand out. And
Definitely.
It's something that if enough of us codify just around practicing respect for ourselves. I mean, think
that's
about
right.
it. White people practice erroneous white self-respect. They'll say, oh, a black man touched a black woman, let's lynch him. That's white self-respect, but it's erroneous because no black person did something to that white person. They're actually just being racist. But they don't
Absolutely.
Let us get, they don't let us fly for anything. When do white people ever say, I forgive the black man that did X, Y, Z to my
That's
family?
That's why I
they
don't let them slide. And
exactly.
and I don't let them slide. And you know, I mean, and sometimes, you know, they can look at certain blacks like, oh, mm-hmm. have you lost your mind today?
Yeah.
Like, I don't expect that of you. Yeah, looks are deceiving. I'll let mm-hmm. my people, and something else my father used to always say, you... Don't you let them get away with anything. If anything, you can let your people get away with something, but don't you let them get away with anything. And mm-hmm. so something else I want to share with Brother Jenna, because it was always a dilemma within myself, and I got over it. With my children, having them in a very white school setting, there were times where I thought, oh my gosh, why did I do this? Oh gosh, I got to keep on my toes. I got to fight. I'm teaching them what to say, how to answer back. I got to make sure every teacher is not being a racist sneak. But I don't regret it. But when you're going through something, you know how it can make you feel when it's happening to you. You're like scared and you think it's just you and that you're all alone. And you're like, but I also think down the years, I do believe there is some merit to our children going to school separate from them. The only thing about the educational process, if they haven't, you know, they didn't teach the real history in my time or your time. So when you don't go into the white institutions, even at a younger age, you know, you have to question whether they're getting the more advanced math, whether the languages are there for them, whether, you understand, whether they're really going to know how to write at a young age. My kids could write at a young age, critical thinking. So you have to weigh things as a personal family choice. You have to weigh these things, but these things are somewhat important. People, you know, if they have ability, they need to be able to critically think. You two brothers can critically think. So you have to think about what's the best route for your children, whether you want them in that white institution. And, you know, so that's, you know, just we have to help each other. And I don't withhold information. I'm like that. You can ask me whatever, you know, knowledge, my parents, my mother included, always said, knowledge doesn't cost anything. What are you going to take it to your grave? Tell your people. But you got to understand, my people was trying to get slaves through the Underground Railroad. Then I had the other side, you know, got this supremacist living down the road in North Carolina. Can't even say who you are, not sure who you are, my own self. You know, as children don't know really race, but right. we just knew he's somebody important because he's always coming around here. But, you know, so they mess us up. They
yeah.
screw us up. You know, I have cousins. You can't even mention this grandfather. You can't even mention him. Because they get infuriated, and they get infuriated because he did. He treated us like it was a plantation. He would look at us, sit on a porch and look at us, just look at us like he was examining us under a microscope.
Now, hold on, Miss Sharon, I'm sorry. but we don't. I really hate to cut you off.
I'm ready to go. No problem. No, don't ever. You know, I don't get offended quickly.
There's no worries. I started this specifically for this reason. The questions I ask, sometimes I have the answers. A lot of times I like participation because the different views and the life experiences tells what happened to you specifically, but it also gives insight to other people so they can kind of understand where the person opposite of them is coming from. But we have to end the night. We're going to discuss that some more. And for those of you out there listening, if you would like to give your point of view or add some facts that you may believe that we're missing, by all means, y'all give us a call. But for tonight, Brother Rise, you want to hit us with the prayer and take us out?
Yes, thank you. Okay.
No, thank you, man.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much, Sister Sharon. It was just awesome having you with us tonight, and your commentary was quite insightful. And I look forward to continuing this, because this is a very, very great conversation. So thank you very much for your input tonight, and hopefully we'll hear from you again. Also, thank you to the other callers and listeners and those who will hear it on podcast as well. We greatly appreciate you giving us your time and attention this evening. You could have been doing something else, but you saw or thought it important enough to listen to what we had to say, and we greatly appreciate that. So we'll say the prayer tonight and close out the show. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice ASAP, and let's end human trafficking and end the prison industrial complex as well. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. And remember the African proverb, if there are no enemies within, enemies without can do very little harm. Peace and love. Thanks again for spending your Tuesday evening into the night with us. We pray that you stay safe and healthy. Stay out of the hands of race soldiers. Do as little as possible to have contact or conflict with race soldiers. And do the same in reference to other Black people. Let's practice some Black self-respect and self-love. Peace and love. Good night. We will see you next week, Creator willing. Thanks once again for your time and your energy.
Peace and love. Good night.
Yeah. We made it. Top of the world. Nice to be.
Yeah. People be asking what's happening with these rapping dudes. Just enjoying the view from this altitude. They can't help but show hatred when you be making moves. We out for that callaloo like Jamaican food.
Yo, what's going on, yo?
Hey, what's good? How you doing?
Chilling, man. Finna go up here and have to put them to sleep because I can hear them. I've been hearing them the whole night.
Oh, they still up. Okay.
Yeah.
They like to cast away. Let's play, goddamn. I didn't know that. I was wondering, I'm like, Dylan's trying to get off.
Hope y'all enjoyed that. Hope y'all enjoyed that. Peace.